We changed the education as well. We changed the whole speech, you know. It's not just in football, it's a generation problem. The way we talk to each other, the way we talk in high professional football, I don't know if we become too soft. The mental part in sport, it's much bigger than you think. I mean, you know, it's big, but
yeah,
it's huge. Now we're talking about the color of our away jersey, you know. We're having themes also at the last World Cup, which are not helping the team to be successful.
That was just a qualifying game.
Doesn't matter, it's still 5-1 and you had to eat it. This is Up Front with me, Simon Jordan. I believe there are a lot of vacuous, uninformed, unchallenged opinions out there. I want to get to the bottom line and cut through the nonsense. So on this podcast with William Hill, I'm going to get people with strong views who think they can stand them up under proper scrutiny. There's a good chance I might learn something along the way, but more importantly, so might you. Joining me in today's episode, one of the greats of German football. Born in a time of upheaval and division, he went on to achieve 98 caps for his country, reaching major finals in the World Cup and Euros. A multiple Bundesliga winner with Bayern Munich before mirroring trophy success here on these shores at Chelsea. Michael Ballack, welcome to Up Front. Michael, nice to see you in that beautiful background you've got there.
Hello.
Listen, Michael, when we're talking to you guys, we start by establishing a little bit about your background, because yours is quite unique. I mean, I don't think there's many footballers or athletes that I've spoken to that have come from a background where you've been in a divided country where ultimately you've got two parts of the same country. You're an East German that ultimately ends up at 13 years of age. The Berlin Wall comes down and you find yourself in a united Germany. But I wanted to ask you what that was like for you as a background.
Yeah, as you described, I was very young. With the age of 13, as you can imagine, you're not even a teenager, really. It's more like a young boy. And I have to say, and I have to remember, I had a very good childhood, you know. Everything was well organized. I had a very good education, good school system. And I went to a sports school because sports was obviously main part in East Germany, where the focus was on. So for many kind of sports, and as a football player, somebody who loves football, I was good enough to join a sports school where, yeah, the combination of learning and going to school, but also at the same time having an education in sport was really good, organized and shared. So, for example, I went three hours to school, 2 hours training, another 3 hours at school, and another 2 hours of training. So the social background was this, high buildings called Plattenbau, where I grew up, where a lot of kids were playing on the streets every day. So streets football was beside the organized football in the clubs, was part of my daily routine. And so that's why I picked up a lot from the street as well.
What was your personality like as a young kid? I mean, you've gone on to be, I don't use this expression lightly, but you've gone on to be a superstar of German football and achieve very significant things. And in a lot of these discussions that I've had with guys that have gone on and been at a similar level, Michael Owen and players of that ilk that have gone on to be significant players, they all talk about this innate confidence and belief and an inherent view that they were going to be successful and they were better than other kids. What were you like as a kid?
When I grew up, I was really competitive, you know. I want always to be the best. But the expectations were always, even at a young age, were really high. So they measure you and depending on your talent. And so was the communication between coaches, between my parents, between my friends. And I had targets even at a young age. I want to become a football player, of course. But at the same time, I knew how difficult it was, because when you play with older kids, you realize really quick the physical difference and which you have to adapt. So there was always something where I had concerns. But when you grow up and you become, you're going to the age of 16, 17, 18, when the big step is coming up to join the professional football, then obviously you realize how difficult it is, and then you have to have something what you can't learn, which is passion, which is competitiveness in a certain level where nobody can teach you. And if you don't have
this,
well,
I think what I was digging at, Michael, there was this innate belief and this sort of sense of destiny that you know you're going to be something. There'll be bumps in the road, there'll be challenges, there'll be obstacles, there'll be physical developments, but trying to get into the mind of an elite player at their formative years to say, was it always sort of priced in and a belief system of yours that you were going to be a professional footballer?
I wanted it, but as I'm trying to describe it, it's not what comes automatically with your talent, because I had these concerns as well, and I had a big injury with 16, right, where I was 1 year out of football.
What did you do? What was the injury?
Oh, I had a cartilage problem, right, you know, because I trained a lot even at a very young age. The doctor said, you cannot carry on with professional or with competitive football. So there was tears, everything. So there was doubts in my following career. So I had to think also in a academic way, which I did, yeah, and being focused on school. But I never lost that target because I was at zero at that point. Yeah. After my injury, I started at zero. I was a talented player, but it doesn't help me if you're injured. Makes something with you in your head. And the decision was, you really want it. I try everything,
yeah,
combined with the passionate, with patient, yeah, and but it worked. It worked out. I was stable. My knee was stable, and so I could be focused.
And away you went.
You
mentioned street football. Did you prefer street football to organized football, and did it give you something different? Because you were a very talented and very technically gifted player, and some of the other players that I've spoken to, like Di Canio, different temperaments, different achievement levels, but again, still technically very gifted. Do you think street football gives you that, and did you enjoy that more initially than the organized structure of football?
Absolutely. You described it really well, because even at a very high age now, you see guys, football players, professional players, they are retired. They love street football. They love the football 5v5 still with amateurs, you know, because it's fun. There's no rules. It's different rules. And the street teach you something which you cannot learn. You know, there is no rules on the street. There is major rules, of course. There's goals. There's part of the games. But there's no coach who's dealing with problems, because you have to deal with the problems under each other. You know, there's a certain hierarchy on the street, and that was really, really important and a major part in my career. I remember I was very, very small at the age of 4 or 5 when I started to go on the street alone and want to play with the big guys on the street, and I had to wait. They didn't let me play with them because I was too small, so I had to wait 1 day, 2 day, 3 days until they were too less, you know, for a game, and they starting to invite me. And so step by step, this is really something in a natural process when you describe that, what is important also on a high level. Because when we talk about education in these days and all these education schools where everything is organized, everything is prepared for the young kids, for the talented kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes I think it's not too easy, but it's a bit too much.
Too comfortable. And they have too comfortable.
Yes, and they have something too early, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
A level on comfort and everything where they have access to next to their talent. It doesn't mean they're not competitive or they're not motivated, but there is a certain level of uncomfortness which you need to be successful on a very high level later.
I mean, I agree that young players these days are given too much too early and too much comfort, and I don't think it builds character. In your judgment, in your experience, how useful do you think is adversity and an ability to overcome it in building the character of a top footballer?
I think it's really difficult to do that in an artificial environment. And artificial, I mean, you're going to school, you go. What I described when I went to a sports school, it was a full day job. for me. But additionally, I went home and I went to the streets. I took this 2-3 hours streets football, additionally 5 p.m., 6 p.m. after my school day. But you need that, or best case, street friends, street life, which teaches you things you cannot learn. They are not prepared for you. They are not made for you.
Yeah.
And this is something which is unpredictable in your head, because you don't know what you expect. You don't know who you will meet on the street. You don't know what happened on the street. So this is kind of challenging. This is kind of necessary, I think, for every human being. So that's why, unartificial wise, it's good to go on the street and to play and don't know what you expect.
I'm gonna move you on now to the beginning of when your career starts. You joined Kaiserslautern at a remarkable time as part of a remarkable story. I would liken it to, in modern times, the successes of Leicester. In my generation, because I'm a little bit older than you, I would look at it as something like Nottingham Forest coming up from the second tier of English football, then winning the league. You join Kaiserslautern, in their first season, they win the Bundesliga. That's a remarkable story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something what never happened again in Germany. And this was something really unique, really special. Nobody could expect that. Nobody thought about that, even not me, when I decided to join the Bundesliga, to join a club where I have a high probability to play. You know, I want time on the pitch, and where you can have time on the pitch as a young player, maybe there's a club who went up, you know, in the first division. But yeah,
How old were you then? 19, 20?
Yes. And but I became a coach with Otto Rehagel, who actually preferred experienced player. But I needed time, you know. He was not immediately that I was part of the first team. I was on the squad. I was on the bench.
Yeah, I think you played 16 games that season, didn't you?
I played 16, but the first 6 months, just three. So the first half, it was, I need patience again. Like, I was very young. And I was really frustrated, because as a young player, you don't have patience, even if the coach tells you, you know. But on the other side, we were successful. We were winning. And that keeps your mind up. That keeps accepting that, even as a young player. Because when you're leading the Bundesliga and you have this big target, and obviously it came like it came. We won the league. It was unbelievable. My first year in the Bundesliga, straight away champion. It was something really special.
You're there for a couple of years. I mean, the second season, Kaiserslautern, I think finished fifth, and you then move across to Bayer Leverkusen. And now, of course, Leverkusen is an interesting story at this moment in time in both German football, for a variety of reasons, because they look like they're going to break the monopoly that Bayern Munich have had for the last 11 years. So I want to get a sort of the sense and scale of Leverkusen that you join, which actually goes on to do some remarkable things, which we'll talk about in a minute, but also the Leverkusen and the achievements of today and what they're doing now in the context of German football.
For me, in these days, it was the next step. Even if we were champion and we finished fifth, Bayer Leverkusen was above Kaiserslautern, because it was a very high-rated club, good education for young players for the next step, but with combined with a lot of international South American top players, young top players, especially Brazilians. They had a very good scouting system in South America. And so that's why a small stadium, I think 22 or 28 maximum thousand in these days, modern stadium, small town. So it was a good place for me to make the next step, to develop my game on a high level. And I was very pleased to get this offer to play at this club, where I had a great time and played with great players next to me, went to the Champions League final. But as you know, we didn't win a lot of titles. Even in these 3 days, I joined Bayer Leverkusen from 2000 to 2002. We were runners up three times. We finished second twice in the Bundesliga, leading the league until the last match twice. So it was really frustrating for me. It was, on one hand, it was a great, great time and over nearly a year. But the last week, it was always really disappointing in terms of not winning the league.
And I was going to ask you about that, because obviously in 2000, Leverkusen have an opportunity to win the league. And they don't. They draw the last game of the season, which they needed to not to win to be able to win the league. In 2001, 2002, a team that could have done the treble falls at each hurdle from the German Cup through to the Champions League and through to the Bundesliga. And it kind of, I believe, got given the nickname Neverkausen rather than Leverkusen in terms of winning things.
Vizekusen.
Okay.
Weisskusen.
Okay. Well, my English translated it as Neverkausen because it didn't win anything. No, but yeah, in English football, what would get thrown at people is bottling, i.e. the team didn't have the mental character to win that, and that could be levied at its players. That to have been in those situations and to have walked away with nothing, that there could be an observation that you guys bottled it.
At these days, it was frustrating, like I described, but they break this now. I'm pretty sure now it's the time where they will win the league. And of course, with Xabi Alonso.
No, you're not going to get away with that. I'm not talking about what they're going to do now. I'm talking about you and your team in 2001 and 2002.
Yeah, we were called Vizekusen, and but we deserved it, you know, because we had the chance to win it, and it was our fault to miss that chance, because it was not that somebody else's fault it was. We missed it. We had this opportunity, especially winning the league. That was the biggest target, winning the league. And I was part of that team. So as a few other big players, they left the club, and they said this, but...
What do you put it down to? I mean, to lose one is a disappointment. To lose two is beginning to become a disaster. To lose three, there seems to be a consistency here. I mean, was it a mental attitude? Was it a mental failure? What was it that enables you to lose three out of three?
I cannot find the right word. It's not a mental failure, but it has to do. It has to do something with mentality, of course, with a mental issue that was in the club, and we were not able to go over this step to win it and to break that. But I cannot tell you what it was, because as a player, you play 30 games, you play 31, you play 32, 33 successfully, and then it's this last match, and you lose that. We could lose an earlier game, which don't even put us in this position. But there's no excuse in these days, and we were or this Leverkusen in these years 2000 until 2002 was one of the best teams they ever had, and it was on us, and anyway, we accepted that. And
how did you respond to it? Because in the same year you have a situation with the German national side, where in 2002, I think you get sent off in the semi-finals. The Germans lose the final. So now you've not got three, Michael Ballack, you've got four. So how was that for you mentally, to look at the fact you've been part of a brilliant side that won nothing and a German side that ultimately loses a World Cup final? How was that for you? How did you respond to that as a person?
Then my character helped me, because I'm my first is I changed the club. I moved clubs, which helped me. Yeah, I moved to Bayer Leverkusen 2002, which helped me. A new environment, new players, new people around me. Bayern Munich, sorry to forget that experience. And also my character. I was always a player or a human being who can accept things, you know, who don't really think too much about what happened and why it happened.
Don't dwell on it.
No, because you cannot change it. So change it when you have the time or the possibility to change it, which means in that game on the pitch. But what happened, happened. I can leave things behind me and I could accept things. And that's really important, especially in sport, in failure, when you miss matches, when you lose a match, and when you lose important matches even more. So that was really important.
Is that a winner's mentality, Michael? The ability to accept something's gone and then try and improve the future?
I mean, you have to start earlier. I won a lot as a young kid, you know, I won championships as a young kid. But for me in that age, maybe 14, 15, that was really important. But compared to my career, you know, when you become a professional player, it seems like not important. But for me as a human being, it was as much as important as winning the league with Kaiserslautern or with Chelsea mm-hmm. or with Bayern Munich. But in a public way, they judge you differently. They judge you on your missing, what you miss and what you lose. And then you become an image. But I repeat myself, it's important that you have the mental strength and your own ability to being focused on your strength. And losing is part of winning and is part of every career.
Of life, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you have to accept things and you have to become stronger at that. But of course, there was some big matches I lost and I had the mental strength and the ability to leave that behind me to be...
And move on to the next challenge.
And move on, exactly.
I want to take you back to Leverkusen for a second, but I want to bring it up to date because the rise of Leverkusen now again and their current performances. I mean, in German football, we look at it and we watch Bayern Munich dominate the Bundesliga, and I'll have some questions about the Bundesliga in a minute, but we watched them dominate. Okay, they got away with one last year with Dortmund choking on the last game. But how big a deal for German football and how big of an achievement will it be for Leverkusen to achieve what it looks like they're about to achieve?
It's huge. It would be huge. It's good for the league. It's good for Leverkusen anyway, but it's also good for the league. And it's also good for Bayern Munich because they have to questioning themselves, which they should last year. But as you mentioned, they were lucky. And of course, if you're winning, you don't really put the finger into the wound and questioning enough yourself, which they maybe should. They burned two big coaches in 1 year mm-hmm. with Nagelsmann and now with Tuchel.
Yeah.
So they have to questioning themselves in a lot of ways, you know. But coming back to Leverkusen, it's a fantastic job they did since Xabi Alonso took over, you know, last year. He did a great job. They signed great players which fit the current team perfectly. And that's a competition the league needed.
Does that do the Bundesliga a good service, breaking up the monopoly of Bayern Munich? Is that what you meant when you said it was good for German football?
That's what I mean. Of course, if always the same team is winning, there's a prediction. Of course, there's a probability to win again and again and again. And we want competition, you know, as a fan, or the fans want competition. They want exciting games. They don't want to know who's winning at the end of the season. This has nothing to do with Germany or with England or with Spain. It's everywhere is the same. You want competition, natural competition, you know? And if one team is dominating a league like Bayern Munich did the last years, of course,
you lose the competition and the intrigue.
It's a bit boring and you want that. And that's why I think, it's good for the league, you know, and it's also a sign on all the other teams. You can do it. You can beat Bayern Munich. You can do a good job. When you do a good job, you
get outcomes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because obviously in England with the Premier League, you've got this unique financial powerhouse with huge investments coming in from all over the world, and it's very different in Germany. I saw recently the resistance to media rights being bought and sold to commercial businesses, and the German fans having a very strong reaction to that. And the 50+1 rule, to my mind as a former owner, makes ownership quite a difficult thing in Germany. Where are you on that rule? What do you think it does for German football? Do you think it's good because it indexes the fans to the club, or do you think it holds back the development of German leagues economically and literally?
It's a very interesting question, and we talked about this question a lot, and there's of course different views on that structure, but thinking international wise, and when we talk about Champions League, international competition, we want to be competitive with our best clubs as well. And that's why it becomes difficult, more difficult when we talk about investments. And money talks. That's not a secret. And there where the most money is, obviously the best players play, you know. And that's why they're doing a good job. But of course, investment-wise, it's not as interesting as, for example, in the Premier League for investors. But when we talk about sport, about football, we don't have to forget the fans. You know, why is football so popular? It's about the fans. It's of about course. The passionate and yep. the whole environment, which is the players, the fans, everything around football. And you don't have to forget that this is a voice.
But do you not think it's a bit out? I mean, I hear you and I get you and I agree with you that the lifeblood, the heartbeat, the emotional reaction from fans, we saw it during COVID, empty grounds.
And we also saw it at the Super League, you know, when we talked about the Super League.
And even
the English fans had a big voice in that. And there were protests.
They did. But do you think in your league, Michael, that the model 50+1 is possibly a little bit outdated?
Of course, it is. It is, but the system has to work. And the fans are still part of that system. And you have to talk to the fans
and bring
to the structure,
yeah.
to the structure that they accept it. You have to take the fans; they have to have a voice in that decision. I'm actually not a fan of 50+1. You know,
no.
To being competitive, I love football, but I love also competitiveness, and I love high level football in a very professional way because I played on that level and I took advantage of that level.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned my history from East Germany. It would never be possible if this political history wouldn't happen. I wouldn't have this opportunity to play on a high level and
yeah.
to compete and to measure myself with the best in the world. And it's a bit with that as well. If we don't adapt in Germany, if we don't adapt to that international...
you're going to get left behind.
Probably. But until now, we found ways on a very high level, not just Bayern Munich, to compete.
We have Dortmund, of course.
Absolutely. So there is ways, but I don't know how long these ways are because the other side is developing as well, and money is the sport
is the
generates more and more
it.
Money, yeah. and we will see what happens.
Can I ask you about Xabi Alonso? What kind of manager is he?
Yeah, first, he has the natural acceptance as a former world class player. You know,
yeah.
you have this respect from the players, which you cannot ask for if you're a normal coach. You know, because he has this history, he has this. Knowledge.
Like Zidane at Madrid, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you're a great coach. But he has to have the character and the speech and the attitude and the personality. So he brings a lot of things combined in a very balanced, in a very good way that people accept you. But the most important thing is that the players accept you, that you can build a team spirit, which he obviously has, because if you watch Bayer Leverkusen playing, it's not just that they play good football, you know, it's also the team spirit they have, mm-hmm. that he creates in this club, because I know the club and I know the former teams over the last years, how players behave, how they play for their club. And I can see there is a difference. And that has something to do with the coach. It's when you compare it with Jurgen Klopp, when he moved to Liverpool,
yeah.
how he changed that club, that mentality of the club. Liverpool always had a great history and was successful in the recent years. But in between, they lost something, you know, they lost a bit of quality, they lost a bit of this and a bit of that. And if you have coaches, because for me, it's the most important person in the club is the coach, is the manager in England called manager.
Yeah.
And because he represents the club. He speaks every day to the press, to the players. So there's so much things he can change with his voice, with his speech, with his personality. And he brings this winning mentality into the club, which he obviously brought.
Do you think that's his greatest quality, his winning mentality?
Yeah, but he achieved everything as a player. So he knows winning. He knows how to the smell is of winning, but he has to adapt to the players. That's the secret for a big coach as well. Even if you were a big player, you cannot combine yourself immediately with the quality and brings that level of thinking, of knowledge, of quality immediately into the team. If you can from day one, even better. But I think there has to be an adaptation, you know, a process, and you cannot learn it.
I hear what you're saying, which is the adaptability. There was often observations made about great players going into management, watching other players that couldn't do what they could do and having no tolerance of it. I think people made observations about Glenn Hoddle when he was the England manager, that was a challenge. Do you think one of the benefits of having managed Leverkusen and not having a team littered with world-class players and players that have strong perceptions of themselves has helped him in that situation?
Now, obviously, he chose his clubs really well.
Yeah.
He knows the first thing you have to accept when you were a big player, that doesn't mean you're automatically a big coach. So you need to learn to manage a team, you know, to work with players on the other side. And that's what he did, you know. And Leverkusen is a perfect club for that. Having high ambitions, being competitive on a high level, but not on the level maybe Bayern Munich or Chelsea or Manchester United. This is even another step because the expectation is immediately on another level. So you need to know that as a coach as well.
When you go to Munich, you're at Leverkusen there for 3 years and you didn't win the things that you had opportunities to win. You're going to Munich now because you believe that's a better opportunity to win things. But it also, it's one of those unique football clubs, Michael, isn't it? Like Liverpool, like Manchester United, like Barcelona, like Real Madrid, like the Milan football clubs, it comes with an intense amount of attention and scrutiny. What is it like to go into one of what I would describe as one of these legacy football clubs where the expectations are so high?
It's not always a joy, you know, to play at that high level clubs because the expectations are so high during 80-90% of the season. You have to win. You have to win. You have to win the next game again and again and again. Where at smaller clubs, there's more joy because there's less expectations. You know, there's more relaxation in your body because if the pressure is more high, that doesn't mean you enjoy it more. I mean, you're more used to it and it's challenging. And I did the challenge because I know what I expect and I can handle it. That's why it's so important to do it at the right moment in your life. You have to be prepared for that step. You don't have to be blind and you have to be surprised if you lose one or two games and then it's a totally different feedback in the media and everything because it's more expectations. And of course.
Were you surprised by it, Michael? Because again, I just to make comparisons that the British audience can relate to, there's so many people that equate the challenges that, say, Man United are having to being the weight of the Manchester United shirt and certain players. And it takes a certain mindset and a certain character to be able to stand up to the intense scrutiny and expectation. More people talk about a Man United loss sometimes than they do talk about a Man City win. And I would imagine it's similar in Germany. More people talk about a Bayern Munich loss than they might talk on a lesser side's win and the lesser side's achievements. I mean, how difficult and how surprising and how challenging if it was you. You've got a strong mentality. You've already indicated that about the things you've overcome and the journey that you've been on, the decisions that you make. But walking into this club, were you surprised by the level of scrutiny and by the level of expectation and by the level of responsibility that you had being a Bayern Munich player?
No, I was not surprised. I was not surprised. I think I was in a good age where I made the move. I didn't know what it means, you know, to being in that position, to being in the dressing room, to feel the pressure by the media, to feel the pressure by the own bosses, you know, and day in, day out, nearly every day. But I was prepared. I was mentally prepared. I had my experience making another clubs. I progressed also in terms of choosing clubs, you know, Kaiserslautern, Leverkusen, and then Bayern Munich. So that helped me, you know, and my past helped me as well to be prepared for that level of football, mental expectation and pressure of football. And I know there was other players next to me, they couldn't handle that so well, which is not a weakness, but it is like it is, because the mental part in sport, it's much bigger than you think. I mean, you know, it's big, but it's huge. It's huge. Why is a player performing under one coach good and under the next one not so good? It's the same club, it's the same environment, it's just a different speech. If you're confident enough in your own ability, nothing should affect you, but it affects you. Things around us affect us. It's something where you have to pay attention, and that's in these days there's a big level of improvement, and also on high profile sportlers, professional sportsmen, to be prepared for certain challenges. And I was prepared, but I also still had ups and downs. That's normal in sport. And but I love challenges, and that's why I made that move.
you obviously had success in Bayern. You win a series of Bundesliga titles. You win German Cups. But you don't win the European Cup. And obviously, elite German teams are set up to win European Cups like any of the other elite teams. How much of a disappointment for you was that?
To be honest, we didn't have that team which they had after after I left the club, you know, where they started to invest more and more in big players. That doesn't mean we had a bad team. We had a good team to win the league, but never really to say at the beginning of the season, we can win the Champions League. We didn't have that team on an international comparison. But it was still disappointing, because I moved to Bayern Munich. I had also the opportunity to go to Real Madrid at these days, 2002. I remember that, but I wanted to join the biggest German club. Also knowing we're having the World Cup ahead in 2006. But it was a disappointment. But that's why also I changed after 4 years to another club.
To go to Chelsea.
Absolutely.
Any regrets about not going to Madrid? Normally, when Madrid come calling, people go running.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but for me, Bayern Munich also, and I have to admit, Uli Hoeneß played a big part in that negotiation and in that to convince me, you know, to convince me to join Bayern Munich. If you go to the office to Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, it's something which they can catch you, you know, they can emotionally catch you. And I was, of course, I was a German player, having always the dream also joining Bayern Munich. So there was ups and downs for each club. So in the end, it was a decision. I was really in a lucky position, because I had a fantastic year, 2002. Maybe one of my best years ever in my career, and then having the opportunity to join big clubs, it was a pleasure.
I mean, you've turned that into a positive, because 2002, you lost three finals, you lost three opportunities, and lost the World Cup. But I hear what you're saying.
You always pick something negative. You see,
I'm just holding you to account.
The perspective could be different.
I'm not picking something negative.
No, it, you're right.
I want to ask you about the decision that you made in 2006. From my understanding, there wasn't just Chelsea in for you, or potentially interested in you. There were, again, Manchester United, potentially Real Madrid, again, and Inter Milan. All of these clubs arguably could be considered, and subsequently did win, European competitions. What made you choose Chelsea?
I mean, as you know, I had a family too. Family always really important for me. To live in a good city was also part of my decision at these days. So London was for me a great city, and to have the opportunity to live in that city, combined playing for one of the biggest clubs, being really, really competitive in winning the Champions League. That was something what I felt they really wanted, and they were willing to invest more and more. And my confidence was high to play it with 29. I mean, I was in a very good age, but it was also something when I do this move, everything has to be right. And that's why I waited.
Well, it's your big, it's probably your last big move, isn't it?
Yes.
Some people might say, well, the economics of Chelsea would have been very attractive because Roman Abramovich's investment and prepared
they
to
were,
pay.
They were.
They were good.
They were also attractive, yes.
And fair play, absolutely. Yes. Why not? But what was another part of it, someone that I have a great deal of admiration for and think often gets misrepresented, is Jose Mourinho. How big a deal in the decision-making process was the ability and the opportunity to play for Mourinho?
Big.
Why?
Big, yeah, because... like I described the move to Bayern Munich in terms of Uli Hoeneß, what he means, what it means to talk to someone like this, that was the same, to talk to Jose. And he could catch you, you know, he could give you arguments. It doesn't need an hour. It doesn't need an hour. It takes 10 minutes, 20 minutes maximum. And then and then you feel it, you know, you feel the ambition, you feel the desire to win something, and you feel that he believes in you. You know, that's the most important thing for a player. When I talk to a coach, of course you negotiate a contract with the board.
Yep.
You don't do it with the manager. But
yep.
When you want to play for a club, you have to talk to the manager and what role he sees in you, what he expects from you. You feel immediately the chemistry, or you don't feel anything, you know, and which is also part of your decision. It's the biggest part of your decision is to talk to the coach. And Jose is a great, great coach, great motivator. And that's why, of course, there was no doubt in that.
What kind of, you know, what people don't get and understand about Mourinho, and only people that have played for him can really speak about, is what kind of style of management he exhibited over players such as yourself. I've heard Lampard talk about him. I've heard John Terry talk about him. They'll have nothing but good things said about him. But I'm interested to see what you felt his greatest attributes were, what kind of style of manager he was in terms of, did he put his arm around your shoulder? Did he kick you up the backside? Was he multifaceted? What kind of management style did just Jose Mourinho exhibit beyond what people see in press conferences and their perception of the teams that he produces?
His biggest strength, obviously, is the speech and the motivation it brings the team together. You want to die for him. He's our leader. I mean, there was a big personality in the dressing room already, but with him as our leader, as our coach, there was a different level of leading and of showing confidence on a professional way. But of course, he had also his techniques, how to handle a big squad and how to get out the best out of a big squad and out of you as an individual. I think there's two ways on a way how to train a team. One way is to do it in a harmony way, you know, to create a harmony into the team, which is a very close relationship between coaches and players. I learned that from the past. I had this with few managers, and there's a way. Another way of a little bit of more distance, you know, I wouldn't say create a fear, but create a pressure, a delivery pressure, where you naturally, as a player, naturally, you want to deliver, and you feel the pressure, but it's not overwhelming you, you know, that means that it's not blocking you. You
yeah.
cannot get the best out of you. That's the secret on a great coach to get this out of a player in a natural way, that you feel that pressure and that little bit of fear and not performing, but you can deliver it because he has also the relaxing part and the human being part, that you can deliver it on the right time. That's the secret. I cannot describe you how he does it. He has it, you know. And
so what you're saying is he has it both. He has the ability
exactly.
to create a culture of fear and awareness consciousness, but he also can make sure that people are comfortable and they can relate and they can
feel. But you cannot feel always comfortable. That's what I'm trying to describe.
Yeah.
He knows exactly how to step back, how to create the distance between himself and the player that you feel, it's time to deliver. It's not, we are not in a comfort zone. I'm in the delivery zone. And that he had always the right distance to the player. Sometimes it needed that very to be very close, but sometimes he didn't spoke to you for a week. Could happen. But you're not questioning that. You know, you're not feeling, what happened? But you felt something, I understand the message. And that's something what great coaches have. And he had that. And he had always also the perfect preparation in terms of training, analyzing the opponents, but also preparing our team in training. I was always at the right fitness level on the weekend. So there was never doing where we had trained too less or too much. It was always on the point. And it was great.
You've come into English football with a different style of football, arguably more physical and a faster pace. But Mourinho has to manage you and get the very best from you and get the very best from a world-class Michael Ballack. What did he do with you that you can recall for the purpose of this conversation that specifically motivated you, that got you thinking, like you said a moment ago, you wanted to die for him?
First, I have to say, I have to have a high level of self-motivation as a high-profile player.
Yep.
If I go to a club and I needed to be motivated by a coach, it's wrong. But, of course, there is always moments in your career or during a season where you're struggling, where you're not performing well, where you have a bad game. And that's about the coach to read you, to read everyone in the squad, and to balance that, you know, to know what's good for the team and to keep the competition up in between the players. And what he always was trying to do to create a great confidence in the team but also for yourself.
Were you a bit shocked and surprised when he gets fired, literally 15-16, one of the big decisions that you made alongside the fact that it was economically worth your while, which is all part and parcel of business. That's the life we all lead in. Everyone wants to make more money. But Mourinho goes. That must have been a bit of a disappointment and a bit of a surprise and shock for you.
We didn't play well at these days. At that time, we didn't had the right results. So it was a question of time when the club reacts. And obviously, the manager is the weakest position in a football team. And but it hurts us. It hurts us and a lot of players. You know, even players that are not maybe playing in the first team. In the first team, I mean, which means in first 11. That shows how respected he was and how accepted he was. And of course, with winning the league twice and what he means to the Chelsea fans, it was also a very big disappointment for everyone, especially for us as a player.
I dislike the way the media seem to portray him as a dark character, as somebody that brings division and controversy and aggravation, the battles that he potentially had with Pogba, some of the behaviour of the Roma team, some of his attitude at Milan. I just look at that as a high-level manager operating in a certain way. But do you recognise the manager that you played for in 2006 to the current Jose Mourinho, where people are saying, you know, it's all over. He's not a top-class manager anymore. And he's also not exhibiting the sort of forward thinking that he was once famed for.
It's sport. So simple as that. He trained the biggest teams, some of the biggest teams in the world, and he was successful. He proved he's a big coach. He proved everything. But in sport, you have to prove again and again and again. And of course, over time, it gets more and more complicated and difficult to achieve that at every club. It cannot work because every club is different. The players are different. The mentality of the clubs are different. And sometimes things are not working. They're just not working. There's not always an explanation. And that makes something with yourself. And especially with a character like he is, you know. If he couldn't handle it, he would not always look for a new challenge. I think that's what he likes, that's what he loves, to being manager and to have this in a daily work. That's him. And of course, people see him controversial, and sometimes it's his fault as well with certain quotes. But he does this sometimes also on purpose. I don't have to describe him now. Everyone knows him. Yeah, that's sport.
I'm going to throw a curveball at you and move you on to your national side. And I'm going to throw it under the moniker of what's happened to the Germans, because we're now seeing a German team over recent tournaments, that isn't really, in my lifetime, with a few exceptions, reflective of German international football. What's happening to the German team?
It's not so easy to explain. We lost something. We lost something, or we lost especially something what was, I think, one of our biggest strengths, which is competitiveness and discipline and the willing to win games. Doesn't matter how. We were not always the best team playing the best football technically, but we had this certain mentality combined with technique, with organization, with discipline, which we stayed for. And we lost that a bit, you know. We looked too much to other teams, maybe to teams who played better football, where we also wanna change our style of play, but it doesn't work. It just doesn't work to be successful. We have still very good players. That you see that where the players play and which club they playing international wise on a high on the best clubs in the world, but as a team, you know, when they come to the national team, they cannot show that as a team over the last 6 or 8 years. So yeah, we lost that a bit. We have to come back to that. We have to understand that first. We have to accept that, and we have to change that.
Do you think it was always a very difficult task for the national side to replace Joachim Löw?
There's always a time where it's over, you know. And he had this big achievement where the federation said, okay, we don't fire him, you know, we give him another opportunity and another opportunity. But things doesn't went in the right direction, you know. But that it's not his fault or somebody else's fault. It's what I'm talking about. It's the mentality of a whole nation, you know. But
what's been lost, Michael? I mean, you, like you just said, you've got players.
We changed the education as well. We changed the whole speech. You know, it's not just in football. It's a generation problem. The way we talk to each other, the way we talk in high professional football. I don't know if we become too soft, but we accept it, or we changed that into a way where we lost strength. And that starts in the youth. That starts with education. That starts how coaches, how teachers speak to children in a certain way, in a good way, but in a competitive way, in a healthy competitive way, which how I grew up, how I knew it.
But isn't that the same? But we're talking about societal things. We're talking about a change. And you're not saying something that I wouldn't suggest is symptomatic of society in England and society in a lot of the West, where we are starting to adapt the way that we develop resilience and fortitude and character. So all of these countries are having these challenges in the way that they produce the next generation of people that are going to be successful. But notwithstanding that, to see the Germans, I would suggest to you that if you weren't hosting this tournament, you'd have had a bloody difficulty qualifying for it. And to see German football, and I'm trying not to smile, to see German football struggling this way internationally is a surprise.
I doubt that we didn't qualify. We wouldn't qualify, but if you see it like that or that bad, okay, we accept it, we take it. But we still have good players. We still have very good players.
You do?
But that we don't have the right balance in the team. Yeah, we think just with playing, with technical ability, you can win matches. No, you can't. You need the right balance. And that's where also a coach managing is responsible for that, to choose the right players. And of course, to choose the right 11, which can win games. And that was not always the case in the past.
I mean, for you, looking at it as a former player, I mean, you played 98 times for your country. You scored 42 goals. You know, you got to finals, you became runners-up, you got knocked out of semi-final stages. But Germany was always in the business end of a tournament. Given that these European Championships are in Germany, what is the expectation level? What is expected as a minimum, or more likely, what are people hoping for from Germany in this European Championship?
It's very low, to be honest. The expectations are not high. The expectations are historically high, but because of the last years, it's not really high. Now we're talking about the color of our away jersey. You know, we're having themes also at the last World Cup, which are not helping the team to be successful, and that's also a part of our generation and our society. Because a national team represents society, represents the country, and especially in football, because this is sports number one also in Germany. Mm. And it's so the focus on so many details is more important than the actual game and the success, being successful on the pitch. And we shouldn't come back to that, how to win games. And we need that in a way, in a competitive way, and talking honest and yeah, then we become successful again.
We've got a lot of talk in the press over in England about this latest generation of English players being another golden generation. It was once referred to back in the day with David Beckham and with Frank Lampard and players like, you will know, John Terry and Steven Gerrard and players of that ilk. There was a golden generation. Do you think players in the UK, or players full stop, are built up just a little bit too much and a little bit too quickly?
I think you have just the right mixture of talented players and working players, you know, on the pitch. You need players who can make the difference. You have them. There's no doubt. But you also have players who can work their socks off, you know, and you need that players. And you have the right balance in the team. They can play any system. They can play attacking football. They can even play now possession football, which England teams always had problems with. So you can play any style of football. That means you educated your style of play. You educated your young players in different ways, and you have the quality of the players. That's the secret. So simple as that.
Is the rivalry in between England and Germany as meaningful to the Germans as it is to the English? Because I think we almost had a national holiday when we smashed you 5-1 in the team that you played in.
That was a long time ago.
Does it have the same resonance to you guys?
That was just a qualifying game.
Doesn't matter. It's still 5-1 and you had to eat it. Right?
But I remember I won the last match at Wembley with 1-0. Was also a big game for us.
Yeah, it was a very bad day for Kevin Keegan.
You don't have to forget that. Yeah.
Yep. But that's whataboutery. You got beat 5-1 next time round. But
just 3 points. You know.
I know. But my question was, there's always this rivalry that's built up between England and Germany. And I don't need to look back into the historic reasons why that might exist, but I wondered if it was as prevalent to the Germans. Like, we have this rivalry with the Argentinians, and when we beat the Argentinians, it means a lot. But when we beat the Germans, it means a hell of a lot. And it's almost used as a benchmark. You know, you've got to beat the Germans. The Germans always do us in important games. And the rivalry that goes with it, is it a curiosity to you guys in Germany? Do you have the same feeling, or you don't?
It is a certain way of competitiveness, but I never felt it so exceptionally in a way you described it. But something special, was always something special to play against England. Of course, you know, you never want to lose against a game against England. This is normality.
Diplomatic answer. Michael Ballack, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for being so upfront with me.
Thank you.
Upfront with me, Simon Jordan, is brought to you by William Hill. For new weekly shows, subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find audio episodes on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.